Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Throwing out another episode here because, Aaron, we're just seeing too many dang good movies.
Oh, man, we are on a roll right now. Wow. I've watched probably 20 movies in the last 3 weeks.
But 2017 was supposed to be a bad year for movies.
Don't believe that hype. 2017 was a very strong year for movies.
I guess it got off to a slow start, but boy, has it finished strong.
Yeah, incredibly strong. The summer was a little weak, like, to be honest.
No doubt.
But
the first 7 or 8 months of this year have struggled.
Like, well, I mean, that was the Trump effect is what that was.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
But then to finish off the year, I mean, we got a slew of good movies.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Hollywood stopped tweeting about Trump and got back to making movies. it's been wild because our next episode, we're doing our top 10 list, which is my favorite episode to do each year. It's super exciting. I always love hearing what's on your list and what's on Skylar's list and your reasons. And it's just exciting to see and hear what films impacted you guys and the reasons why. But what's nuts here is I put this list together, right? And I think I have my solidified top 10, right? I'm like, oh, and it's super hard because my top 10 is like 15 movies, right? And I get it down to the 10, and there's probably five other films that any other day could swap out with the 9, 10 on my list. There's just so much good stuff. And then you tell me to watch a film like Good Time or The Florida Project. I finally get around to watching that. And then everything's in disarray again because it's like, well, where does this go on the list? Because it has to be somewhere, you know? And I'm still trying to put that list together. I don't even know. I'm just gonna blow the whole thing up and then just be as honest with myself as possible. Because I think sometimes I get a little too cute with my lists, you know?
Well, that's what I did. I had to start from scratch because my initial cut was 27 titles long.
Wow.
There were 27 movies that came out in 2017 that I considered for my top 10 list.
Wow, 27.
That's how much I enjoyed them. Yeah, that's how much I enjoyed them.
That's a heck of a year.
I mean, we're talking about, okay, not all the 27 are great movies, but entertaining. These are 27 entertaining movies. Mm-hmm. I cannot remember a year off the top of my head that had as many entertaining movies as 2017 did. So it's been a great year for cinema.
Oh, no doubt about it. I can't wait to record our top 10 podcast, and I honestly don't even know. I think there's like three or four films I'm certain they're going to be my top 10, and then the rest, I don't know.
Wild cards all around.
And so that's the thing is this often happens here at the end of the year is we get this deluge of films that get released on Christmas Day or the end of the year, so they're awards eligible for the Academy, the Academy Awards that come in February, March, or whatever. And so you get a whole bunch, and we don't often have enough time to do episodes on films that otherwise would be totally worthy of a full deep dive episode. And so they get relegated to us mentioning them in our top 10, and we talk about it for a few minutes, but then that's it. And so this episode here is an opportunity for us to give at least three films some love outside. And these films will likely come up on some of our top 10 lists, maybe, maybe not. But regardless, they deserve their own episode. And those films are The Work, which is a documentary. It is Good Time, which is this kind of gritty New York crime film starring Robert Pattinson. A film that you turned me on to, and I'm so glad you did, and we're going to talk about that. And then lastly is The Florida Project, which is no surprise to anyone that's been following like kind of the awards season. It's been getting a lot of awards love, and it's, you know, I think it's 98 or something like that percent on Rotten Tomatoes. And so it was a film I knew I needed to see before I set my list of 10, almost as like a chore. You know, like, okay, I have to see this just to make sure I know it's not on my 10, you know. And then, of course, I see it, and I'm completely moved by it. And so those are the three films we're going to talk about now. And so you got me to watch The Good Time. I in turn, had really, well, I guess first I had asked you to watch The Work.
Right. You sold me on The Work. Yeah, you definitely did. But, and I'm grateful that you did.
Yeah. So. Well, it's a 99-cent rental. I should just get that out of the way right now. On iTunes, it's 99 cents to rent it, which is absolutely worth it. I hadn't even heard of this film until I started reading like the year-end critic review lists, and I'd seen it pop up a couple of places, especially when I had searched for documentaries. You know, we had talked about City of Ghosts on a previous episode, which was just a terrific 2017 documentary. And I saw The Work being mentioned. And it's not a great title for a film. It doesn't really tell you anything. But it also just seems kind of boring. It makes sense once you've seen the film. But it's a tough sell. And honestly, even describing what the movie's about is a tough sell. But I just think it is an incredible documentary. And I think it was TheRinger.com, Bill Simmons' kind of sports and pop culture site. It was one of their film critics that had it as one of his favorite films of the year is what finally got me to pull the trigger. But this is a documentary that takes place in Folsom Prison, which actually is I live in the city of Folsom. The prison itself is literally I pulled it up on Google Maps just before recording. It's 2.7 miles from my house.
Wow.
So I'm actually fairly close to the prison. But The Work is about this therapy program that this outside kind of nonprofit group does with inmates each year. It's like a 4-day program, I believe. They do every year at Folsom. I say every year. It might be more than that. I might be getting some of my information misunderstood there. But essentially, civilians are invited to participate in this program where they work with inmates in this kind of, I don't want to say experimental therapy because that makes it sound like it's not legit. But
I would say it's more non-traditional.
Non-traditional. That's the right term. It's a non-traditional therapy that is both there for the inmates to kind of work through kind of some of their own issues, in addition to the civilians coming, working through their issues, in which inmates, especially veterans of the program, will help the civilians in this therapy work through their issues. Now, if you're telling me a prison documentary about therapy, I'm probably not going to be interested. Now, of course, it's in my hometown that I was raised at. You know, like I should be interested. But man, I start watching this movie, and I will say, in the first 5 minutes, I'm asking myself, "What am I watching?" And then there's this moment that hits where I'm like, "Oh, this is unlike anything I've ever seen."
It's special.
It's special.
It's definitely special.
It's when a documentary can transform. When it can be like a not transformative, but when it can transport you, I should say. To a scenario or a place that you'd otherwise never experience, you know, that's when a documentary is most effective. And that's exactly what this did for me. What did you think?
So like you, I started this movie with reservations. I mean, the first 5 or 10 minutes is pretty slow. I mean, you're just getting the nuts and bolts of how the program works, and you're getting introduced to the program. It's basically run by the inmates. Like you said, there's the nonprofit group that kind of oversees the whole situation, but the people that are doing the talking are the inmates. These are the people that have lived through the program. They've experienced it multiple times, and a lot of them are lifers in Folsom Prison, which is one of the most violent prisons in the state of California. I mean, this is real prison. There's no white collar criminals here, I don't think. These are violent drug offenders. These are people that have really, really horrible pasts. And you get introduced to the pasts of these people that are taking part of the program. So you get to understand what they've been through, and you get to hear firsthand how the program has helped them. And you're also introduced to the three people that we're following in this particular version of the program.
Yeah.
So we get introduced to three people. One is a young kid who's, I think he's 25 years old. He's there because he feels like his life is aimless and he doesn't know what to do next. He says he has a really suburban upbringing with not a lot of turmoil and you know, not someone you would think is a candidate for this type of program, but his journey is very interesting. Yeah. And we'll get into that later. Another guy is he's a black male in his, I think he said, his late 40s, early 50s. He said the reason he's there is because he has father issues.
Yep.
His father was in prison and when he was born, so he never got to meet him. And one of the reasons that he went into this program was he wanted to meet other people that were that either had kids or their fathers were also missing and part of the jail prison system. Mm-hmm. So that's his reason for being there. And I think the third guy is just someone who has rage issues. He had father issues as well. I think that's like the main theme of this movie, really this documentary, is that everyone involved had father issues.
Sounds cliche,
at some point or another.
But
But it's obvious.
Yeah.
And even one of the inmates, he talks about how the reason he's doing this is to help people that have that were missing their father, or, you know, they had father issues of their own. So that's a common reoccurring thing that we see. And with these three regular people, that these regular citizens that go into the program, they're all pretty skeptical, I think, right off the bat. And it's, you know, it's only a 4-day program. So you, I guess you figure, like, what can happen over those 4 days? Mm-hmm. And we come to find out that a lot can happen over those 4 days. It's pretty amazing. So like you said, it's a little slow in the beginning, but once they get into the therapy sessions, it picks up pretty rapidly.
No, it does. And it starts with an inmate who's is his first time, right? So you have inmates where it's their first time in the program. Then you have veteran inmates who have gone through the program and are there to help other inmates or the civilians themselves. Because all the civilians, you know, for the most part, are, you know, they're all first timers. The fascinating thing here is I was reading that the director, they picked three civilians. They had no idea what they were going to get when they were shooting, because in the program, throughout, you know, there's a lot more people that are in there doing it. In fact, you can hear in some scenes, like, what's going on in other circles, but it's never the focus. They honestly picked three and hoped that they would get something compelling. And that's the amazing thing too, is not only is it compelling, it makes you wonder, like, wow, like, you picked these three guys, this is the story we got. You know, like, what are the other stories? What else is going on? But the first big moment is an inmate named Kiki. And this is the thing. This is what's so fascinating, is that in order to participate in the program, you know, I'm assuming, you know, these inmates probably had to have been on good behavior and they earned the right to be able to do it. But you have to check at the door any prison gang affiliation. Like, the whole thing is, you need to come in with absolutely no judgment. You don't come in with male bravado or anything like that. You have to come in, and you've got guys there that are part of, like, the Aryan race, like neo-Nazis. You got guys that were in the Crips. You've got, you know, like, you have a far range, you know, a pretty crazy range of people. You have a Native American.
Yeah, I think they're basically all gang affiliated.
They're all gang affiliated. But they put that aside.
So, yeah, that's, yep,
and,
definitely.
And effectively so, right? And I think they know that, like, mm-hmm. even if they didn't, they would be kicked right out. But like, effectively so. So you have this inmate named Kiki who has the first experience. And when it's pretty intense to watch, because you're wondering, you're seeing this person having this physical reaction to this kind of emotional therapy, you know, trying to kind of scourge the demons of their past, if you will. And the way that the inmates help him do that, you're watching going, like, what is going on? And then when it gets to the civilians, like, you know, that the next day and beyond, it gets even better. But it was something that, to me, that I was so transfixed. Watching this world that I'm so unfamiliar with, but also just having all these conflicting feelings about, like, rehabilitation and, you know, like, man, some of these guys, they're done. Like, you can tell that this program's probably helped a lot of them, but, like, they're never leaving here. And rightfully so. Some of them have committed heinous crimes, but other ones you just think, oh, what if they could have had this type of therapy or rehabilitation pre-crime, right? Like, that's
sure
the devastating nature of it. But you really meet an interesting cast of characters in this prison.
It's fascinating, because I don't think that this prison is particularly interesting. It is a particularly interesting collection of individuals. I think that just people in general, if you allow them to speak their mind, and if they're comfortable enough to speak about their past, I think they're all interesting, especially if you're in prison. I think we just got a taste of these really, really interesting individuals, but it could happen at any prison, really.
Yeah, no doubt. You know. It's about how do you effectively, especially with guys in prison, how do you effectively create an environment where they're comfortable letting that guard down?
Yes.
That's what I doubted going in, wondering, like, okay, mm-hmm. how is this? And boy, do they let their guards down.
They do. I mean, everyone that we see that goes through the process and submits themselves, I mean, they're raw. They're basically, their emotions are naked, mm-hmm. and they're fully exposed. And, you know, you can talk about how non-traditional the treatments are, mm-hmm. but it seems effective to me. Yeah. I mean,
well, they flash you, a statistic see these at people. The end, and this isn't a spoiler, but of all the people that have gone through the program and whatever that criteria is to have gone through the program, you know, of the inmates that weren't in there for life or whatever, they've had, I believe it was 50 people that have gone through the program and have been, you know, released from prison.
Right.
And of those 50, zero have returned. considering that usually like the what is like the retention or the rate of returning back to prison is like 65%. Recidivism.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very high.
Yeah. And so
it makes you almost wish that some of these guys that are lifers, if they could maybe get another chance.
I know.
Obviously, like like you said, they committed some very heinous crimes.
Yeah, you have to consider the victims and families and whatnot.
You definitely do, but man, this is a movie that gives you hope. It does. And I think that's what I liked about it so much. Is you imagine a jail as a hopeless place, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
But seeing this movie, I think there's hope there.
Yeah.
For everybody. So
well, some of them
really, really cool watch.
There's a couple guys in particular that just go on a couple monologues that were really inspiring.
Yes.
And you're listening to them, and it's a pretty remarkable thing. I think maybe why it resonated so much for me is that we live in this polarizing age of, like, especially, you know, in Trumpism, you know, like, you've got such extremes of people, from, you know, the people marching with tiki torches to, you know, to even the, mm-hmm. the other end of it. Not saying that I'm not about to equate the tiki torches with the Antifa movement, but like, I think there's so much hatred in the world and so much mudslinging and so much just seeing something where you're like, okay, there's this, you know, there's this neo-Nazi guy and this guy from the Crips that are holding arm in arm, helping a civilian work through some stuff when they really don't have any reason to do this. But it gives me this weird sense of hope for, like, I don't want to sound hokey, but almost kind of this human spirit. Like, oh, like, wow, okay, no, if this can happen, then, you know, like, we're going to be okay. Like, if only people could come together for stuff like this, like in the pursuit of helping other people, like it was just a beautiful thing.
It really is. It's like I said, it's one of the most inspiring movies documentaries I've ever seen. And it's just like what I found really fascinating was that these people came together and it wasn't under the pretense of even a religious movement. It was like beyond that. Mm-hmm. It was just like a human movement.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really interesting. I don't even know how the program got started. I'd love to learn
either.
More about it.
I don't know
it,
even so. Know what it's based in. They do this. This guy comes out and does this chant at the beginning, and I'm not familiar at all.
Oh, yeah, the chant is.
Yeah.
I almost was out.
Yeah, well,
that's
the hump you got to get over, because that was for me. I was like, what is this? And then once you get past that, then you're like, okay, it's you're in.
Yeah, yeah. So, very cool. Yeah. Very good movie. I'm glad you recommended it.
I'm glad
it.
You saw it. And for those listening, it's 99 cents to rent. On iTunes, so there's really no reason to watch it. It's terrific, you know.
And it's called The Work.
The Work.
2017.
The Work about Folsom, Folsom State Prison. All right. Yeah. This second movie was the one that you recommended to me. Good Time. I want to know what possessed you to track down this Robert Pattinson film, and why did you have any thought in your mind that this might be good?
So Good Time is a movie that I heard about a long time ago. Actually, it started making like the festival circuit and I heard buzz about it. And, you know, I just love the setting, basically. So for anyone that doesn't know, Good Time is a movie that's set in Queens. It follows these two brothers. One's played by Robert Pattinson and the other's played by one of the co-directors. And the co-director plays a kind of a slow brother, I guess. He has some sort of mental mm-hmm. affliction. And Robert Pattinson's character is just like always looking to be a savior, basically. So the movie starts out in a therapy session between, I think his name is Nick. The slow brother is Nick.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And so he's in therapy and... you know, the therapist is trying to make a breakthrough with this guy, trying to make a connection, but he's obviously not interested. And in bursts through the door, his brother, played by Robert Pattinson, and he just pulls him out. He yanks him out of there because he doesn't think it's helping. So he's going to rescue his brother. Now, what he's rescuing him to is a bank heist. So, yeah, he breaks him free from the therapy so that they can go rob a bank. And that's kind of the essence of these brothers. They're low-level crooks, drug users, drug dealers. They're involved with all the underbelly, the seedy underbelly of New York, based out of Queens. So that's really what sold me on the movie, was just the seediness of it. I heard it was like a Mean Streets, which is one of my favorite movies, directed by
Scorsese.
Scorsese, yeah, it's one of my favorite Scorsese's. So people were comparing it to that, and I saw the trailer for it, and I loved it. First of all, the movie's shot on film.
Oh, yeah. Like,
there aren't many movies shot on film anymore. And this movie is perfectly It's a perfect story for a movie that's shot grittily on film. So yeah, it's about two brothers that they rob a bank, and they get, obviously they get caught because they're losers. Mm-hmm. And the whole rest of the movie is Robert Pattinson's character trying to bust his brother out of lockup, essentially. So I
really knew very little about this movie when I watched it, and dude, this thing was a thrill ride.
Yeah.
And it is a non-conventional story in the sense that, like, you know, it's told linearly. I mean, it's told, you know, it doesn't do anything crazy experimental in terms of, like, it's not like some sort of artsy fartsy movie, although it is shot on film. It does have this gritty kind of synth 80 design and feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is shot so up close that it is alarmingly claustrophobic.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's claustrophobic is the perfect description for it.
Yeah,
shots.
Whole time, like, yeah. I'm watching it and I'm like almost suffocating because of what's happening, because of the way it's filmed, but in a good way. It was a thrill ride. I felt like I felt like I was following someone that was wandering aimlessly necessarily, but it really was. This journey of this character, Robert Pattinson, from, you know, robbing this bank with his brother to the rest of the evening, like one event after another. And it's talk about subverting expectations of what I think would happen next. You know, like, I've seen a lot of heist movies. You see a lot of these things and you think, like, okay, well, this is what's happening. And then all of a sudden, no, there's so many curveballs. You're like, oh, whoa, I guess it's going in this direction. But it works for the story. And for what it's working towards, I think the ending is a little controversial. But I actually do think the ending fits the theme of the movie and what was going on. I'm not sure about the very last shot. I have questions about that. I don't want to go into spoilers. This film, you know, I don't want to pretend like I have like all this New York experience. I lived there for 4 months in Manhattan.
You did live there though. So you spent time in Queens.
I've spent time in Queens, but enough time to know that this was a film made by people from New York, which the Safdie brothers are from New York. I mean, Robert Pattinson turns into a performance that I didn't think he was capable of. Stunned.
He is so good in this movie. I mean, the movie itself is, like you said, it's very tense. It's anxiety inducing. The cuts are super quick. There's so many close ups, and just the way the camera is positioned is just really, really stressful, which is great. I think it's perfect for the attitude of the movie. Like you said, it takes place over about a 24-hour period, and everything happens to this guy, to these brothers, basically. Mm-hmm. Everything that can go wrong does go wrong.
Absolutely.
And that's what's fun. That's what's fun about it, right? So you're taking this journey with them, with a million obstacles. And the only reason that they're doing it is because they love each other, basically. So that's why he's trying to get his brother out of jail, because he loves him. He wants to take care of him. So that's the brotherly relationship that's on display in this movie. But Pattinson is he hits a home run with this one.
He's so good.
His American accent is as flawless. Well, I mean, it's very New York
accent, because it quickly becomes Boston. People can't do a New York accent because the Boston one is just more pronounced. And I think especially someone like Pattinson, who's from England, right? It's hard to get the difference between the two. But I don't know if he just had a dialect coach, or if he just worked super hard at it, or if the Safdie brothers were all over him. But he nails it. He just really nails the Queen's accent. It's just...
He's great. Yeah. And you don't even recognize him. Like, that's the thing. He has a bad goatee, scruffy haircut. He does not look like a movie star.
Yeah.
It's great.
I mean,
you've also
got a little bit with a part with Jennifer Jason Leigh, who is terrific in a little bit. You got Barkhad Abdi, from Captain Phillips. I'm the captain now, in a great part. I mean, just a terrific cast.
Even the therapist, it's beautifully shot. It's
incredibly shot. I think the way I could sell this movie to people isn't just a New York heist film, but I think what you're going to get is a unique film experience unlike anything you've seen before. It's not going to be like maybe your very, very favorite film of the year. It's certainly not going to be the feel-good film of the year, but you're going to watch something. You're going to go on a ride that you're like, wow, I've never done that in a movie before. I've never felt quite like this before, or seen a story told this way. And that's saying a lot. A lot of movies have been made, but I just felt like this one had such a distinctive, unique way of telling the story that it just felt unlike anything I'd seen before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. And, you know, the first time I saw it, I didn't love it. I thought it was really good. And I knew you guys should definitely watch it. But I watched it again just last night or the night before.
Well, because you told me I should see it. And then I saw it and I was like, dude, what did I just watch? I loved it.
Yeah. It's shocking. The movie is jarring. Yeah, it is. And that's what I loved about it.
Well, it grabs
upon second viewing.
Like if I could,
it's great.
It grabs you by the lapels. It's like the equivalent of someone grabbing you by the lapels and not letting go, and then just and then just throwing you back out at the end of the film. You're just like, what did I just do?
And so that's the thing. Like, you feel like Robert Pattinson grabbed you by the hand and he's dragging you along for the next 24 hours.
These Safdie brothers. I'm excited to see. I hope they can do more. You know, than just like New York gritty crime films. But like the physical sensation of the experience of watching this movie was such that. That I really want to see their talents utilized and broadened. I'm really excited to see what they do next.
Yeah, and you know what? It actually makes me excited for what Robert Pattinson does next. I've never been a fan of his, but man, I'm a huge fan now.
Well, yeah. So. I mean, people like Pattinson, I mean, even like Gosling, people who maybe even to some extent Matthew McConaughey, who kind of get pigeonholed or even start at, you know, in these kind of romance or rom-com type of roles. You know, they have to work to get respect. And honestly, Pattinson in my mind was never, I never even considered. I just never thought he would ever break out of kind of what he was stuck in. But man, this is an indication. This guy's going to.
He does it.
He's got a lot to offer.
Very cool. And I will say, good use of a pit bull in the movie.
Oh, yes. Yes, very good use of a pit bull.
So yeah, go watch Good Time.
Yes,
it's available streaming.
Gritty.
I think it's like $4.99 on iTunes.
Yeah.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the third film, The Florida Project. This is a film directed by Sean Baker, who did Tangerine. I didn't see the film, but it was it received notoriety last year for being filmed entirely on an iPhone. That's really all I know about him. But The Florida Project's been getting like a ton of praise. It's starring Willem Dafoe, as well as a handful of newcomers, which are really the main subjects. Willem Dafoe here is definitely in a supporting capacity. And then a turn by our Donal nominee, Caleb Landry Jones, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But when did The Florida Project come on your radar? What interested you in seeing this?
So I heard the praise of this movie probably about a month ago. And once I started to hear about the praise, I started to look around for it to watch the thing, and no one was playing it. So I just kind of had to wait it out, and eventually it became available online through nefarious means. But I watched the movie, and it was incredible. It's an incredible journey.
Yeah, it is. You started watching it, and you wrote, wow, this movie is, I think you said, bleak AF was your text. And then you wrote, like, which means, I think you wrote something, which means it must be true to real life or something to that effect. And so your comment there, that text was enough, you know, for me to want to watch it. I mean, I was interested in seeing it anyway. But this is a movie that takes place in kind of like, I don't know if underbelly is the right word, but it's kind of in the shadows of Disney's resort Magic Kingdom in Orlando, where there's kind of a string of kind of these pretty low rent hotels or motels, excuse me, that you have a lot of people that are trying to have extended occupancies there that are otherwise homeless. And you follow the main character is really told through the eyes of this little girl. How old is she? Six, maybe?
She's got to be. Yeah, she's six. Mooney.
Her name's Mooney. The actress, incredible job. I saw her on Kimmel, but like just remarkable work by her, as well as her mom, who I'd written down her name. I don't know how to say it. I think she's originally Lithuanian. Do you know how to say it?
Abria Vinate. No.
Yeah.
Well,
so these are the main characters.
Vinate?
And you've got this mom who is in her early 20s. Who's essentially trying to provide for her mother or for her daughter, who also, you know, I mean, I'm going to pass my own judgment here, is fairly irresponsible as a mother, at least in the way she supervises her daughter. But the movie does a good job at showing kind of setting up this world where there's this motel. These kids are running around. They're kind of getting into trouble. It's interesting because the story is told through the eyes of this little girl who's so full of life. It's like summertime. Every day is a new adventure. It's a new thing. She doesn't really realize that she's poor and kind of destitute in the way that an adult would read this situation. And it's interesting because you're watching a story of through her eyes. You're also watching Willem Dafoe, who's the manager of he doesn't own the motel, but he's the manager who's trying to be, you know, draw a hard line, but also be benevolent and watch his character try to actually balance that those two things, as well as a mom who's trying to desperately provide for her daughter, who's just in a scenario that's like impossible. Now, this sounds bleak, and in some ways it is, but it's one of those films that's cast in a way and portrayed in a way that has this level of authenticity and vibrancy that just I couldn't keep my eyes off the screen. The performances in this movie were maybe some of the best in any movie I've seen this year. What for you is the standout quality of watching The Photo Project?
This is a world that I'm not familiar with, but even dipping a toe in.
I stayed at the Travel Lodge for Star Wars Celebration, right. Literally in that same neighborhood of hotels.
You were saying that you noticed some of the landmarks.
Absolutely. Yeah, I recognize a lot of it. Yeah.
And which is actually one of the scenes in the movie is when these out of towners accidentally book a room
at the Magic Castle
in this hotel. Yeah, oh gosh. This movie we get introduced to these people that are you could say they're down on their luck, but this is just the reality. You know, they're homeless, and the only way that they get can survive is living in these long term motels. Mm-hmm. And it's not just one or two people. It's basically every occupant in that motel is in the same situation, where they're just scraping by. They're barely making it to the next day, and it's a struggle. This is the modern struggle of 2017. This is not something new. Unfortunately, it's still the reality for a lot of people, especially in Florida. And which is really interesting because you have the backdrop of the Magic Kingdom, right? So this is like the happiest place on earth. And on the other hand, you have the bleakest place on earth, basically, where these kids are, they're running up and down the hallways and they're begging for change. Yeah. They're selling cologne to make ends meet. They're waiting at the back of restaurants for old food to eat. These are people that are forgotten by the economy. Now, maybe they're not the most responsible. Maybe they didn't make the best choices, but that doesn't mean that they should have to live like this, in these terrible circumstances. That's not really a judgment that you make in this movie. It's more of just shining a light on their situation. Sure. Now, that's what I came to understand by watching it, but that's just me, you know? So, like you said, the things that stand out about this are the performances. The kids, all of the kids Incredible. Are great. All the little kids. The first half of this movie is basically seen through the child's eyes. The second half of the movie is basically you're getting more of the mother's experience. Right. But that doesn't work unless you have an incredibly strong cast of kids. And that's what we have in this movie. Yeah. You referenced the Mooney character, Brooklyn Prince is her name. She has other friends who are maybe not as strong as she is, but they're great.
They're really good, yeah.
They're really, really good. They're fun to root for, and, you know, they're little hellions, but, I mean, they're kids.
Yeah.
They're just making the best of their situation, you know. Yeah. Whether that's, you know, watching... peering through people's windows or, you know, trespassing or spitting on cars, harassing tourists. Oh. I mean, that's what they do.
You talk about them living in the shadow of like the happiest place on earth and look at them. They're not obviously like in one of the worst spots. But what's also fascinating is this is one of the entertainment capitals of the United States in Orlando, right? I mean, you have not just Disney, but you've got Orlando and SeaWorld and all these things. Mm-hmm. But yet throughout this film, you see the way these people entertain themselves and what they get excited for. It's actually interesting, that juxtaposition, because whether it's a fight in the parking lot and a car is hitting people or the condos go on fire and everyone comes running out super excited being like, oh, there's condos on fire. Like, hey, let's go. Come on, everybody, let's go. You know, this is their attraction, right? Is that, you know, just this accidental chaos, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, that's the reality. So they're making the best of it. And it's an incredibly interesting story. Like, there's not really much plot to this. Yeah. It's more the fact of you're experiencing their day-to-day lives. You brought up Willem Dafoe, and he makes a valiant effort as this the motel manager to walk the line between professionalism and having a heart. Obviously, like, of all the characters that are in this movie, he's probably the one good person, yeah, top to bottom. Yeah. Even when he has to make hard choices, you can tell it's agonizing.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a huge credit to Willem Dafoe. I mean, he's such a great actor that you can see the pain underneath the decision that he's making. Yeah. He doesn't want to kick anybody out. Like, he wants these people,
yeah,
to, you know, keep living their, right, lives. Like, they, but he, you know, also, he's also running a business. So he's getting pulled in multiple directions, yes, basically.
Like, he has a boss.
And yeah, he sure does. And I think one thing that we find out throughout the movie is it's not just his, not just being torn in two directions. He's also being torn in a personal direction, where we get introduced to his kid. And we get just a peek into his personal, yeah, life, and it's not good.
And it's just a small peek.
It's not good. It's a tiny little peek.
Just a couple scenes.
And right. And that's, I think that is, that rings so true to me. It's like, you know, people you work with, you don't know what happens when you go, when they, yeah, go home. Sometimes you hear about it, but you don't, you never know. Yeah. So I really like the way that they played that as well. So
me too.
Willem was amazing. I think if anyone's going to get nominated, he, yeah, deserves it the most. His performance was just incredible, man. So inspiring. But yeah, there's so many great moments in this movie. Like, that's really what I loved about it. There's these little moments. Like you said, the condo's going on fire is a great scene. There's a scene where an old pervert comes, mm-hmm, and talks to the kids. And that might be Willem's best scene in the entire movie.
It's his
movie.
Oscar reel scene. Like, if he gets nominated, that's the scene they show him. Yeah.
I think it is. He's so great in that little scene. So this is a movie. I mean, it looks sad. If you watch the trailer, it seems pretty bleak. Mm-hmm. But I think it is worth
it
your
is.
Time. It is the most, probably the most moving dramatic film that, yeah, I saw this year. It's incredible. It's just an incredible
Just
movie.
One more note on Willem Dafoe's performance. And this is why I think it's so worthy of recognition, is that it's not a flashy role. I actually think,
no,
and the other roles, especially about the, you know, the mother, and the daughter, Brooklyn Prince, is that right?
Mm-hmm, Brooklyn Prince.
They're, yeah, they're incredible. They do have a little bit more, you know, to work with in terms of, you know, they can be a little more showy in what they're doing. But Willem Dafoe, yeah, who we've seen him showy in, like, you know, as the Green Goblin in Spider-Man, we've,
yeah,
seen him,
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually has to be pretty subdued and really act a lot more with his eyes and his face. And he kind of has that weathered look of a guy that you, mm-hmm, could see in this job, you know?
Very Florida. He's
very
Florida.
Like this tan leather skin, yeah, leathery skin, you know, that's, yeah, just, yeah, kind, yeah, of, he's just, you know. But it's just these little moments where it's, I look at this thinking, wow, I didn't know Willem Dafoe could be this good. It's not a theatrical performance at all. It's a very natural performance,
mm-hmm,
which I think is also the case for Mooney and her mother. But I also think that those two people weren't classically trained actors, right? Those are people,
right,
you know, that credit to Sean Baker, the director. He casts incredible people. Even the pervert that he casts, you know, that type of character, that, and the way it was acted, it was just on the money. And yeah, it was just, you can't, it has this almost docu feel to it in a way, because it feels so real.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the other credit to him. When you cast a movie like that, and everything feels so natural and real, it's important to get people that can perform, not just look, yeah, the part. Right. And so he found someone in the Haley character, which is, mm-hmm, the mother of Mooney. He found this girl on Instagram, yeah, and he literally direct messenger through Instagram,
yeah,
to cast her in the movie. And she's great.
She's incredible.
She nails, yeah, the part as this 20-something single
mother.
They gave
her 3 weeks of acting training, and then she was on, they're filming. That was it.
And so, yeah, that's just natural, yeah, talent. She's so good. She's so talented. And you believe her in the role. Yeah,
no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. Great performances all
around. And I guess lastly then, what your thoughts on the final shot of the film?
Yeah, the final shot is... I mean, we won't say, mm-hmm, what it is, but like, if you read any review, there's a lot of critical discussion about the final shot. I will say that, you know, I understand what they're trying to do. and maybe they didn't pull it off perfectly, but it's not that bad. I don't have a big complaint.
It didn't like
the
ruin it
shot.
For
I've,
you or anything.
No, and I've heard people that have said this: the final shot ruins it for me, and I don't understand that whatsoever. I think
so
it's just fine.
We certainly won't say what the shot is, what they're doing. I think it's safe. I think we can say that the final shot is shot on iPhone, and that's part of why. I think it's probably good for people to know that before they see it, so they understand when it transitions from the normal film to the shot from the iPhone, it feels very jarring, which is probably my biggest criticism, is that transition from an emotional moment right at the end into the final scene shot on an iPhone. But the actual scene itself, I really like conceptually. I actually like the idea of what they're doing.
Totally. And it makes perfect sense
does.
If you think about it.
It totally makes sense. And I really, really like that. I think that like that idea in the writer's room, like on the drawing board, makes sense. I just wish it wasn't shot on an iPhone, though. I get it.
I know. Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's like if you think about it after the fact, it does make sense. And like you talked about, the leading up to that final scene is the most emotionally powerful sequence of the entire movie. Oh, yeah. So butting those two things up together maybe wasn't the best idea, but it still works for me. I don't have.
I mean, it's his ending. Really, it's what he wanted to do, and he went for it. I do think the execution fell a little short, but I like to see big swings like that, so I'll give him credit for that. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, he definitely swung for the fences. Yeah. So, but the whole movie does. I think the whole movie. You want to talk about taking chances? I don't know that any dramatic film took as many chances as
this
one did.
It's true because it is thin on hard plot, right? I mean, you're kind of experiencing this movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you boil it down, it's basically the day in the life of a hotel.
Yeah,
so a motel. Yeah. So that's what it boils down to, but. It works. Yeah. I mean, it works beautifully. It's an amazing movie. I recommend this movie to anybody that likes
the
film.
Florida Project. So, Do you know why it's called The Florida Project?
No, I don't.
So I was wondering if there was a story behind it. So that was the code name for the construction of the Walt Disney Resort in Orlando when it was being built. They called it The Florida Project.
The Florida Project. That's great. I don't think it's streaming.
Not yet.
But so yeah, if it's in a movie theater near you, go out and see it. You will absolutely be entertained. You'll be transfixed.
And if any of you happen to be members of the Academy and you get screeners, please watch the screener.
Yeah.
There's no other way to access
good
screeners
too.
Online, by the way. No other way.
No, it's absolutely impossible. Don't even try searching for it because you cannot find that.
Yes. Because our screener was sent to us from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. We'd share it, but it's watermarked with the Brave Little Podcast identifier. Yeah.
I mean, we'd all go to jail.
Exactly. No one wants that. But anyway.
Unless we're going into the work, and then I definitely want that because I feel like wrestling with 11 men. So
I'll go be the civilian in that program. So there you have it. Go see The Work. Go see Good Time. Go see The Florida Project. It's an embarrassment of riches here at right at the end of 2017. We got a lot of great films, and we may or may not be talking about some of those films on our next episode when we do our top 10 films of 2017. So look out for that. Anything else, Aaron?
No, that'll do it
for
me. All
right, that's it. As we say,
hold on to your
butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.